Morning, Brad.
How's it going?
Good, thank you.
Now, look, can we, as is tradition with the Wednesday Work File, can we get you to state your occupation?
So, it depends when you're meeting me. So, we could say an astrophysicist, but, you know, you can also say an astronomer. So, the difference between the two, so if you're on a plane and you want the person to talk to you, you say you're an astronomer. If you want them to ignore you, you say you're an astrophysicist.
Because
that just sounds way too out there. Yeah,
that's awesome. Now, look,
not an astrologer though.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They make money.
That's right. Okay, cool. That's a good distinguisher. First question, and this is the only question that I had when we found out that we were going to be talking to you. I mean, I've got a million now, but this was the one that popped straight into my head initially. What do you think about aliens? What do you actually think about aliens?
Yeah, so, okay. I definitely say that they exist. Mm-hmm. Now, when we say aliens in science, usually we're talking about bacteria, you know, small things. In terms of, like, intelligent aliens, definitely. I would say something like this interview, we'll say this Wednesday work chat is happening, I don't know, 10, 20 million times right now in the universe.
Like, really? Wow. So you're talking about like alternate realities and stuff like that?
No, I'm just talking about just in our universe.
Wow. Really?
So like, okay, so our galaxy, we have 300 billion stars, 300 billion suns in our Milky Way.
Mm-hmm.
We know roughly each star has at least one planet, sometimes up to, like, you know, we have 8 planets in our solar system. We're not going to talk about Pluto. It's the shame of all astronomers. we know of multiple 5, 6, 7 planetary systems. So there's probably 3 to 5 trillion planets in our galaxy, and there's 2 trillion galaxies in the universe.
Mm.
Wow.
So, and if you just think of, like, we think Mars used to be habitable. We think Venus was habitable. We think some of the moons of Jupiter and Saturn are currently habitable, currently hosting life. So when you add those numbers in, it probably just means that there's a lot of stuff down there. So I would say there's been this tide 50 years ago was a bit taboo to think aliens.
Yeah.
Most astronomers, you can go up to Mount Shlomo, ask anyone, they would say definitely to aliens, and then the debate about how that intelligence plays out. But yeah, I would say for sure.
That's so cool.
Well, as an astrophysicist or an astronomer, what do you do in your day-to-day job? Like, what do you have to go in and do?
Paperwork.
Right.
So, like, the smallest part is actually looking through a telescope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I just came back from Mount Shlomo. We run 2 sites, Mount Shlomo here in Canberra, and then we run what's called Sighting Spring, which is our dark sky site.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about 7-hour drive away from here. So if you know where Dubbo is,
yes,
it's 2.5 hours north of Dubbo.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
That is
in the middle of nowhere.
You don't want it near people, right? So we have 64 telescopes up there. So I actually just came back from there. So usually when you're at a telescope, you get a lot of data that can be used for quite a while. So there's a lot of software writing programs, analyzing the data. I work on building also new things. So right now we're looking at building a mission to mine asteroids. So we want to capture an asteroid, park it near the Earth in orbit, and mine it.
Oh, wow.
Well, I read about that in the news all the time, but I imagine it's like a far off thing that someone's gone, oh, like, we could write a news story about this. It's not true.
So, in fact, there's a project we're working with JAXA called the Japanese Space Agency, and it's called Hibiyusi-2. And so the probe just entered orbit around the asteroid Ryugu, and then it's going to drop these canisters, which are going to burrow down into the asteroid, take samples, and then pop back up, and then the little probe will just, like, swallow them up, and it's going to return back to Earth. That's literally already happening.
Wow.
Then there's OSIRIS-REx, which is this NASA mission, which is going to extend this arm and drill down like 500 meters into the asteroid and take like a core sample and return it back.
Yeah.
So we've already made Bruce Willis irrelevant.
Yeah.
I mean, we can still blow him up if we want, but you know.
Yeah, look, are you...
That's really what I think about.
Are you originally American, Brad?
Yes, I am. Okay. So I'm from California.
Awesome. Now, my question is NASA... would be, like, do you technically work for NASA or...
So I work for a few different groups. So my main employer is the ANU.
Yep.
I also work on NASA projects. So next week, I'm going to NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, which is outside DC.
Yep.
So I work on a lot of 2 NASA space telescopes right now. In fact, Kepler, the one I've been using, so Kepler is the one finding all these planets around other stars. Just died this weekend. So, you know, have a pint for Kepler. So we do get affiliated with it. You know, NASA has a lot of different arms. There's a NASA base station, a ground base station right out down the road from Mount Shlomo, Tidman Villa.
Yeah.
Right? That's where all the deep space signals come from. Mm. So I have multiple bosses. Is a fancy way of saying it.
Do you, like, literally, you've made the joke already about what you tell people you do for it. Had you ever dropped the, yeah, I work for NASA?
No, I mean.
Have you ever dropped that? Because I feel like that is the ultimate conversation starter. Like,
I'd start every conversation like that.
I have business cards made up.
So it's funny. I was with a friend of mine, and we were at the pub, and then his other friend showed up, and we were talking and something like that. And I was like, he's like, oh, yeah, we'll go introduce ourselves. And my friend's like, oh, well, you know, Brad could just introduce him as an astrophysicist who works with NASA. And then he's like, oh, yeah, that's a good joke. Let's all do it. And he's like, no, he does. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I guess I do. It's one of those things, like, it just happens. So it's kind of cool. And I guess the novelty slightly wears off until you meet other people. Yeah. Right? I mean, like, you guys have a cool job.
Yeah, but not as cool as working with NASA.
No, but there's good aspects and bad aspects, right? I mean, how often do you like waking up at 2 a.m.,
That's
right?
a good
you
point. Know? Not often. That's a good
not very
no,
often.
No, exactly. So, you know, there's good bits and bad bits, but it's a fun job.
Yeah. There haven't been a lot of movies starring, like, Tom Hanks where, like, they play a radio announcer or something like that.
I'm sure there's one in the works. Yeah. Tom Hanks. He plays everything. He will not settle until every role has been cast by him.
Well, that's, speaking of space movies, there's a new one coming out called First Man. It's going to be about Neil Armstrong. Yes. And I think Ryan Gosling's in it. Do you, and movies like Hidden Figures and stuff that seem to somebody like me to be like these amazing stories that are very scientifically accurate, do you have a little bit of it ruined for yourself? Do you go into these space movies and go, that wouldn't happen, wouldn't happen?
Yes and no. I mean, I it's part of it is telling a story, so you want people to be engrossed in the story and you have to abbreviate things.
Yeah.
But there has been this push to get things really more accurate. Mm. So I've actually worked on a few of the like Hollywood movies as a scientific consultant.
Oh, wow.
Wow. So my latest one was Alien Covenant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's very cool.
So don't blame it on me. My work stopped half hour into the movie. So, like, there's great opportunities to showcase, like, the entire engine in Alien Covenant is modeled off something that we're testing at ANU.
Oh, right? Wow.
Like, so they're really cool ways. So sometimes it's ruined, and sometimes it's like, you do it for storytelling and you understand it. And stuff like Hidden Figures has been, like, they've strived to get so many details. And, like, those people behind the scenes, which are quite cool, and stuff like the Apollo 11 landing about, you know, the role Apollo 11 had in Canberra with all the data coming through the red. Like
the
it's
dish.
Nice to, it's nice to hear those people behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, in your opinion, and just your opinion alone, what do you think is the most fascinating thing in the universe? What, every time you hear about it or see something about it, go, oh my God, I can't believe that.
Ooh, that's a... That's a tough question.
And it's a very heavy question.
So that's big. That's like 14 billion years of history. Condensed down to one.
If you could just pick one thing, that'd be great. Just the one.
Yeah. No. I fundamentally say when we try to describe what is the Big Bang.
Right.
Okay.
Because it's the beginning of space and time. Mm. And everyone always views as time as this abstract concept, but time is actually a real physical thing that can manipulate. So like you can change time, you move through time differently. Like, so like, for instance, let's go to Melbourne. Mm. So I'm going to fly, you can drive and you can walk.
Okay. Yeah, yep.
All right. So going to Melbourne, it takes about an hour flying, modulo, not Tiger. Mm. driving 7-8 hours.
Yeah.
Walking, let's say it's
a year for me, probably.
Well, no, 600 kilometers. Let's say you can do 30 kilometers a day, so 20 days.
Yeah.
Right. Let's be generous. Mm. So how much did you age going to Melbourne?
What, like 10 hours?
Yeah.
For 6 hours?
I aged about a day an hour, and you aged about 20 days,
yeah.
So you move through time differently, even though you move to the same 3 points in space.
Wow. Yeah.
But it's more than that.
When do you do stuff like this often where you just hurt people's brains?
Yeah. Well, it's like
I'm just sitting here right now going, ow.
But then you realize we can actually physically do it when we travel fast.
Yeah.
So like GPS satellites are in a different frame of time. So this idea about what our actual universe is such a fascinating concept that is not just this theoretical abstract thing. There's like cool, tangible things like GPS satellites have to correct for moving in a different frame of time than us.
Do you remember a couple of years ago when, speaking of the Big Bang, like the Hadron Collider test was done, and like I genuinely for a second there thought the world was going to cave in on itself because there were all these news stories coming out saying we could accidentally recreate the Big Bang and cause it. Did you, as somebody who knew what was going on, like at least better than me, were you even remotely concerned that could happen?
I was rooting for it. I was like, yeah! So it was one of those things like the prediction that said it was going to happen, it would immediately say that it would evaporate. My thought was, if it actually does, like, dude, we just created like a little Big Bang.
Yeah.
Because our universe is going to end at some point. Yeah. Right? So, billions of years down
morning,
the road.
Morning, everyone. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Don't worry. It's long after the sun has destroyed the Earth. You're okay.
So it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better.
That's right. It will warm up. Yeah. So, you know, on a nice morning like tonight, you know, think about it. It will be warmer. And so, like, the universe will end. And so it was kind of an idea about what can we recreate to see, because there's a theory that our Big Bang was a previous universe that has ripped itself apart that gave birth to our universe. When our universe dies, it might actually rip apart and give birth to a new one.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like, hey, we might actually be able to test this. So you get to do these like random stuff just because you can. Like there's people who think about, are we a giant simulation?
Mm. Yeah, that's look, and this is kind of plays into the question I wanted to ask you next. And this definitely not to get political on you or anything. But for somebody that has such a wide ranging view of history and where we are and how insignificant we are, do you see things like, say, a Donald Trump presidency, which makes a lot of people really nervous about the current state of the world and everything? Yeah. Do you see that and take it a little easier because you understand in terms of how insignificant we are and how long the world's been around and how, or do you get just as worried as everybody else?
I would say I get just as worried as everyone else, right? You know, it puts things into perspective, but it still is tangible to you, right? You know, it's kind of like everyone says, oh, you want to go to change the world, but I can't. But, you know, you could change the world for a few people and that's what matters.
Right.
And right. And so, yeah, I mean, if people, you know, change the course of where we're headed, then that would change the course of life in this planet, and that's still a big impact.
Yeah.
Yes, we are statistically insignificant, and so there's like some solace to that. But I am not statistically insignificant. Neither are you.
Yeah.
And so it does have real world effects, and that's the same stuff we do when we have scientists talking about colonization of Mars. Mm. There's interesting consequences that this has that we need to think about and plan for and talk through. And we're doing stuff in space that is so cool now, but it's pushing the bounds of whatever we thought was possible.
It's exactly like that Ryan Reynolds movie, Life. Mm. That's terrifying.
Yeah. It's very, very scary.
Yeah, if you've seen that movie, you'll know what I mean.
When you saw Elon Musk shoot his car into space, just take it back a notch from like, are we insignificant in the world? Did that make you angry when it was like apparently going to potentially hit Mars and like contaminated?
Yeah, I mean, there's like a robot army on Mars already, right? You know? No, look, okay. So, yes, it was a bit of a PR stunt, but legitimately, they needed ballast in the rocket to test how much weight they can actually put into orbit, right?
Oh, right.
So they physically had, so the other plan was just a lump of cement. Like, that was the other model.
Right.
And so, like, okay, yeah, fine. You might as well do something fun.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and,
see, I just thought it was good.
I was going to say, because the lump of cement could be seen as an act of war to another planet if we're literally hurling an asteroid at them.
Exactly.
It's dangerous.
So, you know, so there was a legitimate reason of why they needed to test.
Because the car becomes a gift.
Yeah, exactly.
The cement is dangerous.
Yeah. Exactly. That's right. And so it was one of those things where he also said he wanted to inspire people. And I think that's fine. It got people talking and thinking. You know, the cool part is all of those images actually came courtesy via Tasmania.
Oh,
so
wow.
All the images from the rocket were transmitted via a radio dish in outside Hobart. And
then
transmitted to the world. And so it's kind of a cool way of inspiring people. But yeah, I mean, I kind of like the idea that in 500 million years, there'll be a civilization. There'll be entire PhDs done just on trying to figure out why there's this random car orbiting Mars. and they'll come up with all these theories. And the answer is because Elon Musk could.
Elon Musk decided instead of cement, it's just a car.
Yeah. But no, there'll be the entire field of the car around Mars.
Well, once again, not to get too heavy or holistic or anything like that, but you think things like you keep hearing about like Space Force and, you know, there are these spy satellites that are going up. For the most part, as somebody who knows exactly what's going on in the present setup, is it much more of a hopeful story when it comes to space and nations working together much more than they're working against each other to try and keep things secret, or are big projects being done with all different nations being involved and helping each other out?
It's both.
Yeah, right.
So like the space station's a great example. So, you know, there's multiple countries involved in the space station, and, you know, people work together because that's, you know, they have the other people on board and ultimately something goes wrong. It doesn't matter everyone on Earth.
Yeah.
But then there's also like even still political issues. So the Russian side of the space station is noisier than the American side.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost caused like diplomatic problems because of the loudness.
Yeah, right.
But then people do work together. Like space debris is a big problem. Space junk, all this stuff floating around that could potentially crash into satellites, like the movie Gravity.
Yeah.
every country works together on it because it affects everyone equally. So there's this mix of both cooperation and competition, and there's that slight balance that is why it keeps it, I think, going quite well.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting, like, while the potential militarization and weaponization of space is happening, you know, people quote unquote call Space Force, it's still, there's still this belief that it should still be quite peaceful and scientific and cooperative, and yeah, that overarching opinion is still being pushed forward. So it's kind of, it is nice.
There were reports that came out that, and I think they're pretty recent reports, that apparently Reagan said to Gorbachev, like back in the Cold War, if aliens were to appear, we're going to drop everything and we're going to get together and just, we're going to be people. Yeah. You reckon if we actually met intelligent aliens and they came to us, all our differences, as the great President Whitmore says in Independence Day, all our petty differences would just be thrown aside and we'd get together as planet Earth?
You'd want to hope so.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's not even just humans, right? It's, you know, it's Earthlings. And, yeah, and that's to some degree how we have to start viewing ourselves as we push forward and as we start talking about going to other places. That's what we are. Mm. So you hope that this could unite it instead of just causing fear amongst people. And yeah, I don't think we have to inherently fear aliens. Like, every movie always shows them invading us.
Yeah.
Interestingly, when we go to their planet, though, in the movies, they're always peaceful.
Yeah.
You notice
yeah
that?
Yeah.
So, and it's this, like, it's just our projection of ourselves and our history.
We're just great.
Yeah,
and right, they're bad.
Yeah. So it's finding that right balance. So you'd like to think that we'd work together if a hostile force from another planet came to us.
Yeah.
Would you personally, if you could go to space, would you?
No.
Do you want, you don't want to go?
Nope.
How come?
It's really dangerous.
Yeah.
So so my wife works in space medicine. Mm. So there's actually like people who do space medicine.
Mm. Yeah, right.
And that's longevity space flight. How can humans survive space?
Mm-hmm.
And astronauts have a huge amount of problems that aren't publicized. Like, we are cancers. They have vision problems. Like, so if you think about it, if you ever get up and you get lightheaded, like, because your fluid is not quite in your brain, astronauts have that all the time. Because the fluid isn't flowing right in their blood.
Gravity,
right?
Yeah.
So if you actually ever see an astronaut come back to Earth, you will never see them standing for at least 2 weeks, because otherwise they stand up and they faint.
Oh, wow.
So they have, like, vision problems. Even the spacesuits, most astronauts have shoulder reconstruction surgery.
Because they're so heavy.
Yeah, and so when they go from microgravity to gravity, tears their shoulders apart. So gravity, like, space does a huge amount of things to your body. Here, I'll do a pop quiz. What species of animal has been in space the most? Not ignoring like bacteria and stuff that doesn't count.
Monkeys?
Dog.
So the Russians love picking up stray dogs. and, like, stereotypically, the French chose cats. Jellyfish.
You're kidding.
Really?
Yeah. 60,000 jellyfish have been bred in space. So, because jellyfish form by crystals forming in their tentacles, and that's how they use as, like, buoyancy to figure out up and down with gravity.
Right.
So NASA breds generations of jellyfish to have them form in space, brought them down, and then the jellyfish didn't know how to swim on Earth.
Wow.
That's insane.
And once again,
that
hurts my brain.
Yeah.
So the most species of any animal in space, like that from Earth, jellyfish.
Imagine being...
That's crazy.
So we technically already have aliens, because we've bred stuff in space and then brought them to Earth.
Yeah. People have bred like vegetables in space and then have eaten them, not Martian poop potatoes like Matt Damon.
Disgusting.
Everything about Matt Damon is disgusting. like, people have grown lettuce and stuff like that on the space station and have eaten it. So we're working towards moving to these sorts of things.
That's
incredible.
That jellyfish thing is
that's
insane.
Like, you always
think they just don't know how to just don't know how to swim at all.
Yeah, like they can swim, but they don't know up and down. So they're disorientated, right?
Yeah.
Because the way they know how to control their bodies, it does not apply.
Yeah. And I've seen people try to teach kids how to swim. So imagine trying to teach a jellyfish how to swim. Brad, thank you so much for joining us. We literally talk for hours, but we've already talked for so long.
Yeah.
So, mate, thank you so much for having a chat to us.
Anytime, guys.
Yeah, thank you.